from Parshat Tetzaveh.
Okay,
start with that.
Got so many choices.
So good. Okay.
So then what I wanted to do. It's a short one. Page Kuf Chaf Gimel. And it's on the right side of the page, third paragraph. Ya'aroch Oso. Ya'aroch Oso V'gomer Me'erav Ad Boker, etc. So it says that you take the oil for the menorah and the Kohen, he arranges it. Ya'aroch Oso. He arranges it from night until morning. Lachain Kasiv V'lashon Arifa. Because this is why it says V'lashon Aricha. Because really, you'd think it should say Yadlik Oso. He should light it, and it will last from the nighttime until the morning. Why does it say he will arrange it? If you think about it, let's just say, for example, when you light your Hanukkah menorahs, first you arrange them, set them up, and then you light them. It seems to be focusing on the arranging part of it. Why doesn't it say, and he lit them? So he says, ki. Ikar hadlaka haya b'koach elyon. Because the essence, the main part of the lighting, that really came from above. It's true that he physically lit the menorah, but the actual power of that really came from Shemayim. Kamo shekasev, as it says, shetihiya ola me'aleha, that the candle should, the flame should rise by itself. To say it's happening really from a higher koah. Rak sha'al yedei arichas ha-kohen bo ha-he'ora. But it's first through the arranging of the kohen, when he arranges the candles, that's where the he'ora, that's where the light comes from. So the idea is this, that we do what we are able to do down here in our world, and then Hashem looks at that and his higher light shines upon that which we do. So it focuses on Ya'aroch Oso, he shall arrange it, because it wants to let us know that's the part that we do. And then the light from the menorah comes from above. Even though, of course, he physically lights it, but the emphasis is on we do our portion, and then God blesses it with his light.
I just want to point out one observation. When they were giving the patterns for the setup of the Mishkan, where everything was to go, there is a, before you start the actual process of the operation, there was a certain pattern, what direction goes where. Mm-hmm. That's why in this particular parsha, all the intricate details, some people find, don't care or find boring all that. Each had its own pattern, how many loops, how many this or that.
Right.
There isn't ever... So it's like a reflection from above in an very orderly fashion and a reason for each.
Yeah, we have to set it up in that way, and then the light from above shines onto it. That's right. Okay, now we'll do one from Purim, and then we'll also do one from Parsha Zohar. First of all, an interesting thing, although it doesn't come out that way this year, chronologically, but we'll take its message anyway. The very first Maamar on Purim, page Kuf Chaf Hei. Right. Ordinarily, Tainus Esther is the day right before Purim. So this year it's not. It's a little bit earlier because you can't have Tainus Esther on Shabbos. So let's take a look at this idea. Harishonim Hikshu. The earlier Chachamim and Tzadikim, they had a question. Al Kviyas Tainus Esther B'yom Yud Gimel. Why the Chachamim were Misakein the fast of Esther on the 13th of Adar? Because it actually would seem to be a problem. Shehu mi lifnehem shel Purim. That's the day right before Purim, and ordinarily you're not supposed to fast the day right before Yom Tov. And here the Chachamim go ahead, and they establish a tainus right before Yom Tov. Usually you don't do that. That's lifnehem. V'atam hu. So he says the reason is as follows. Dikamo b'yom kippur. Hukba yom shalafon of la'chila u'shasiya. Just like on Yom Kippur, we know there's comparison between Purim and Yom Kippurim. Just like over there, the day before the fast, which is Erev Yom Kippur, is a day of eating and drinking, and there's a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. Mibnei shahatainis acharei achilo shesia kashayoser. And we know that fasting after you eat is harder because your stomach is expanded. So it makes the fast a little bit more difficult, a little bit more challenging. Kamochein, likewise here, besimchas Purim, on the day of our celebration of Purim, nikba yom shalafon of latinus, the day before Purim is established as a fast day, mivnei, shehasimcha achar hatinus gedola yoser. So too, the joy which follows a fast is also greater. So you fast on Tinus Esther, and that emphasizes and magnifies the joy of Purim. The im kenan, therefore, kevan shekol ikaro shel kviyas hatinus biyud gimel, being that the main reason for establishing the tinus on the 13th, hu kidei lahagdilas hasimcha b'Purim, is in order to increase the simcha of Purim. Lo haza bichlal iser lifneihem, it's not within the category of things that you cannot do before Purim, before Yom Tov. So had the tinus been deemed by the Chachamim to take away from the simcha of Purim, then apparently they wouldn't have established it then. But being that the tinus emphasizes and increases the simcha of Purim, therefore it's fine to lead into it with the tinus.
I'm still unclear on how it's increasing unless you're drinking that every day.
I think he's saying, like, when a person is in a state of, somewhat of a sadness, then the joy that follows sadness is more highlighted than the joy that follows it.
So why wouldn't we establish the tinus before every other?
I don't know. It's a good question. Or why wouldn't we look at it in the same way? Unless it's not possible, just one thought here, maybe it's not possible by the other Yom Tovim to cross that bridge so easily. So the tinus during the day actually detracts. But Purim, whose simcha is so overwhelming and spills over so much, perhaps even the transition from tinus to simcha is smoother, and therefore it's able to be accomplished on Purim. Possibility. It says something about the simcha of Purim, you know, and how unique it is, that it can take the tinus of the day before and bring it into simcha. Okay. Let's see, there's another one on the next page. Where did that go? Yeah, two pages later, page Kuf Chaf Ches. Third paragraph on page Kuf Chaf Ches, where it says, Minhag Kol Yisrael. Okay, it is the Minhag in Kol Yisrael to have the Sudas Purim late afternoon, and then it extends into Shushan Purim at night. But that's how it's done, Minhag Yisrael. On page Kuf Chaf Ches. So he wants to talk about that minhag. Minhag Kol Yisrael le'achol se'udas Purim b'leil shel ha'acharav. It is the minhag of Kol Yisrael to eat the Purim Suda on the night which follows Purim. And that's to say that it extends into the following night, into Shushan Purim. So what's the reason? You figure you would... Why would you establish the Suda in such a way that it goes into the next day? Why wouldn't you want to have it on Purim day and emphasize that? So he says, no, by time, kideisa b'midrash, it says in the Midrash b'midbar, shofech dam rasho'im ki'ilu hikriv korban. It says, a person who destroys wicked people, it's as if you have brought a korban. So what do you know about a korban? The kodshim ne'acholim liyom v'layla shela achar kach. When you eat a korban, kodshim, you're supposed to eat it by day and then the night which follows it. That's how a korban is eaten. Yom and layla shela acharav. So the achila of Purim is like a korban. That's what he's saying. That's how kodosh it is. But since the downfall of Amalek happens through the hands of Klal Yisrael on Purim, the Purim Seuda is like a korban, and just like a korban starts by day and you can continue eating it at nighttime, so too the Seuda of Purim starts by day and you continue to eat it the following night. And that shows that it's kadosh like a korban.
Now, Rabbi, how do we get around the explanation when Purim falls on Friday, as it has, and you cannot go into Shabbos, so you have to do it early in the afternoon?
Right. Well, there Shabbos overrides, you know, because
okay.
You're not allowed to make that.
Okay.
In that example, right.
Okay.
Happens sometimes in Yerushalayim like that.
Next to Friday.
On Friday, yeah. Pretty rare, but it does happen.
Twice in 12 years.
Something like that, yeah. Right, so that's the great kedusha of Achilas Purim, is that it's like a korban. Okay, let's see one more here. Also a short one. This goes on the next page, Kuf Chaf Tes. Again, the third paragraph. Must be something in the air today. He said the Gemara. The Gemara, it's brought down, Rabbi Natan Netiya B'Purim. Rabbi Huda Hanasi, he used to plant a certain planting on Purim. Lumaskinan, and they conclude there, Natiya shel simcha nata. He planted something that was of joy. Maybe it was a tree, and that brought him simcha, not sure. So what is it saying that you plant simcha on Purim? Sharamzu bazeh. The remez is, ki bapurim yecholim lita natiya simcha v'leiv ha'adam. On Purim, a person is able to plant joy within their heart, lismolach ba'avodas habore yisborach, to be joyous in the service of Hashem. So what does it mean to plant? If a person experiences joy and then the day is over and the joy is gone, then that's not planting. It's just kind of passing through. But if you plant something and it's there and it takes root, now, you know, it blossoms and it flowers and it's permanent. And that's what he wants to say about the Simcha of Purim. It's planted within us so that it stays within our heart after Purim is over and continues with us. It doesn't simply, it's not simply an experience for us which then goes away. So that's Rebbe Natan Netiya of Purim. Rebbe planted this planting of Simcha on Purim so it would stay in his heart, and same thing for us, Simcha Purim in our heart.
Perhaps it was an Esra.
Maybe an answer. Yes.
Same concept.
Yes, Andrew.
I have a couple questions.
Please.
Number one, does that simcha go from Yom Kippur to Purim?
I don't know how long the simcha Purim lasts here. I don't know how long it lasts. You know, something about this almost sounds like it just lasts forever. You plant something and it's there. But that might not be the case, and it could have a shear to it. I don't know what the shear is.
Because that was my next question. Is it also true for Shavuos, for Pesach?
If you have the idea of Isru Chag, the day after Yom Tov, and then certainly the 7 days after Yom Tov. And also when it comes to to Sukkot and Shemini Atzeres, Simchas Torah, the tefillah that we say there includes that the Simcha of Sukkot, of Sukkot and Shemini Atzeres, that should go into the whole year that follows. You can also look at it that it lasts until Hanukkah, that the joy of Sukkot takes us till Hanukkah, and then Hanukkah takes us the rest of the way up till Purim, and then Purim till Pesach. But I don't know where you draw the lines there.
And you don't know if it's the same level of Simcha.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I think as kind of a machshava or a kavana on Purim, this is an important idea, and the idea that that you don't want the simcha to just be something that comes and comes,
right?
That we want it to be something that takes root inside us and has sustaining capacity.
And it becomes a permanent fixture.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of our personality. Wouldn't that be nice?
Mm-hmm.
Right? To be able to draw on that all the time.
Well, yeah, and I believe it's possible.
I believe so too.
Well, we know that it's possible from sadness.
Right. You know, really, why not see one side of it?
It could use the same pathway.
It's a good riot. Okay. Let's take a look at one from Parshas Zohar. These are all kind of short ones here. Page Kuf Chaf Dalet, and that's second paragraph. Although it is the third paragraph from the top of the page, so we're consistent here. To Timcha Zecher Amalek, you shall erase the memory of Amalek. Levadai Yochol Habore Yisborach Limchos Oso Berega Echad. It is certainly within Hashem's powers to erase Amalek in an instant. Right? What's this idea that it has to extend until finally it's destroyed? God could just destroy Amalek. However, Rotza HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lezakos Es B'nei Yisroel Lehiyos Mechiyas Shemo Al Yedei B'nei Yisroel. Hashem wanted to give the Zechus to the Jewish people that the name of Amalek is erased through us. So instead of God obliterating Amalek in an instant, although it's challenging and difficult and creates a lot of suffering, but He gives us the ability and the opportunity to destroy Amalek's shame, and giving that to B'nai Yisrael creates the Zechus for us. That's what Hashem wanted. Of course, you know, it's important to remember that a big part of Purim is the destruction of Amalek. And not just reading it and remembering what happened to Haman and his sons, that they were destroyed, but it is actually through our simcha on Purim that Amalek becomes destroyed, you know, in the present tense. One of the reasons for that may be because the Torah says, Asher Korcha Badera, that Amalek cooled us down when we were going out of its rhyme. That kind of dampened our spirits. So the victory over that is joy, the simcha. When Klal Yisrael therefore experience a shleimistika simcha, complete simcha, that in itself is a destruction of Amalek. So it creates a zechus for us that we destroy Amalek. And secondly, going back to the previous mimer, that's the destruction of Amalek that he's referring to, which therefore makes the achila on Purim like a korban. It's the simcha that we experience that destroys Amalek, and it's that same simcha and destruction which makes that achila last from the day into the night like a korban. Yes, Chaim Quinn.
Bumper sticker, the best revenge is living well.
Right.
So we can be the simcha. That's how to break it.
Very good.
How to get even.
Very good.
Do you think the Amalekites are related to some way the Israelites?
Sure. Yeah, because there is, you know, a force of Amalek within every person. And even though we don't know who that nation is out there in the world, but we try and identify what they did to our own Yetzer Hara and what it tries to do to us and overcome it.
So maybe the constant struggle of Yetzer Tov over Yetzer Hara, there's actually simcha in that struggle. And that's what keeps the simcha alive all the time, is that struggle, the constant consciousness.
That's great. I mean, and I think it's a great way to look at it, because if we could be besimcha in our struggles, I think we'd have the upper hand. You know, the Yetzer HaTov would have the upper hand. But when we start to feel pulled down by the struggle itself, then it starts to master us. If we could really retain the simcha approach to the struggle, it was a lot of spiritual benefit. I think that's, you know, one of the keys in people who are able to do this well is that they look at the struggle as an opportunity. So there's joy in that, as opposed to one more thing that brings me down in my life. It's a hard thing to do, but if it can be done, it's a great mila. Mark, did you have a comment?
Yes, yeah. I actually have a question, because these days a lot of people, if they're not from, particularly in the secular community, are going to regard Purim as just a minor holiday, if you will, and they're going to say, I had a good time, I went to the Suda, I wore this and all that. Well, that's childish. Only children do that, or carnival, or whatever. So how do you tell an adult, they're not educated enough, you know, in that sense, that without, if it wasn't for porn, if it wasn't for, you know, an ace that really came out, we would not be here, really. It's more than just a childish thing. This affects everybody. Because this is a constant reminder. How do you tell somebody?
Well, you just did it.
One room back out.
Okay. It's a major holiday. It's not a minor holiday. We don't have minor holidays. They're all major.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of the joy of the day is in relationship, just as you said, to our nation was saved from destruction.
Well, it's not a full yom tov like Pesach.
There's no Itzer Malacha.
Yeah, full
yom. You know, but it's certainly not a minor day. It's a bad English term, is what it is. When they say it's a minor holiday, it's not a correct term. It doesn't come out right in English.
And Mark, maybe one other point to emphasize when you make that point, which you did very well, is that the Talmud says that in the Messianic time, that all the other holidays we're not going to have anymore.
Purim will return. Purim less. Also, of course, there are deeper ideas behind the dressing up and the costumes. Now, one of them is that is one of the most important messages of Purim. Now, that the world is a mask and it disguises Hashem's presence. And on Purim, we were able to look behind the mask and see God's will and His plan. And the idea of dressing up on Purim is consistent with that we're presenting a certain facade, and beneath the facade is the real human being. And that's like the world is. It's one of the reasons we dress up on Purim. And also one of the telltale signs of that is kreplach. Because when the minhag Yisrael is to eat kreplach like it is on Purim, and that's meat hidden inside of dough, it's the same concept, that there's something deeper, more hidden. Flesh. Abyssal flesh.
Somehow there's a lot of food things.
Same thing with Hamantashen too, also, that the filling is hidden inside of the dough. Minhag Yisrael Torah.
Yeah, but you get to see if you get a prune or
you after you bite into it, right?
Is this an avoda or is this a matana?
Okay, now there was one more that we could do because we have a little more time. Let me just find it. It's back to Purim. Oh, here it is. It's actually not. That's why I couldn't find it. Right? It's toward the end of Purim, Kuf Lamed. Very interesting. Kuf Lamed, left side of the page, about three lines down. Kishenifkishu Harav HaKodesh Rav Yitzchak Mivorka Zatzal V'Rabbeinu Im Dr. Levi. One time, the Tzaddik Rav Yitzchak of Mivorka and the Chidushe Harim, they met with the Dr. Levi. And who was he? Maskiro Shel Moshe Montefiore. He was the secretary of Moses Montefiore, right? Who was a great patron of Klal Yisrael and of Torah. Ubikshu mimenu lifol levato limud chova shal sefos liyadei Yisrael. They asked Dr. Levi to try and make it effect a change that he should nullify the obligation of the Talmidim in schools to learn languages. So apparently there was a government requirement at the time that you had to learn languages. So they wanted to get it annulled. And they came to this Dr. Levi, who perhaps through Moses Montefiore could get it annulled. Ton, so Dr. Levi, he gave a taina. Hello, Halom in Megillas Esther Yesh Lanu Hakacha Shetzrichim Ladaas Sofa. So he said, hold on a second. There's a proof from the Book of Esther that it's important to know other languages. Why? Acheres lo haya Mordechai mevin Tursis. Otherwise, Mordechai would not have understood that language Tursis. Lashon Bigson Viseresh, which is what the two guards were talking when they plotted Achashverosh's murder. Shemizen Nitzmach Kol HaNeshol Purim, and the whole miracle followed that. Mordechai understood what they were saying, and then he reported it, and later on he was saved because of it. So he's trying to say, well, maybe it's a good thing for us to learn the languages in school. So Heshiva Rabbein, the Chidushi Harim, answered him, and he said, no, Mikan Hofacha Lehefech. He says it's a proof just for the opposite. Ki ilu haya yodim kol hayuhudim lashonos, haya bigson viseresh nizharim. If all the Jews knew foreign languages, then bigson and seresh would have been careful, velo hayu medabrim benochachos Mordechai, and they wouldn't have spoken what they did in front of Mordechai, because they would think that the Jews know other languages. We have to speak only amongst ourselves, but they thought the Jews didn't. The ilu Mordechai ne'elatz haya l'da'as b'chol ha'lashonot. It was Mordechai himself who put forth individual effort to know all 70 languages, b'hiyosa b'sanhedrin, because he was on the Sanhedrin, k'dei shelo tehei Sanhedrin shoma'as mipi ha'maturgaman, so that the Sanhedrin, if they would have to hear a case from somebody who spoke a different language, they didn't want to hear it through an interpreter, because it takes away from the person's complaint. So they had to know all the languages. But the rest of Klal Yisrael, no. So that's what the Chiddush HaRim answered him. He says, no, it would have been advantageous for us not to know them, because then people don't think we know them, as they're plotting against us in a foreign language. One of our Chachamim will be able to understand, and he'll be able to take advantage of the situation. Clever, clever response.
I read this in English. In English, it was a book that was written. My wife got it out of one of the libraries, written in 1946, I believe. So I had this story, and then right close afterwards, this was right after the war, said that in a speech, Hitler himself said that if Germany is ever defeated, they'll make another Purim. The Jews will make another Purim. Meaning he recognized, he knew about Purim enough to say, I'm like Haman, and if I go down, they'll have a reason to.
Well, you know, at the Nuremberg trials, when they were all convicted to be hung, and I forgot which one of them, after the conviction, he said, Purim fest for the Jews. And also there were 10 who were executed at Nuremberg trials. This is a very famous Maisa. I heard it came from the Avar Benel, that when it says the 10 sons of Haman in the Megillah, there's 3 letters that are written small. They're all written very large. And 3 letters small, just Tuf, Shin, Zayin. Look in the Megillah, you see those letters are small. And Tuf, Shin, Zayin is 707. So the Avar Benel said that in the year 5,707, there will be another 10 sons of Haman who will be executed. And the Nuremberg trials, there were 11 who were convicted of execution, and the night before the execution, one of them committed suicide. And then the other 10 were on. There's a lot of similarities there in the Chiyas Shemo. Shel Amolik, Yimach Shemot, Zichro Lo'ad. Okay, Yashur Kalach.